Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all. Hey, check it out. I got Yosef Butt on the line. He is a nuclear physicist and is a senior scientific advisor to the British American Security Information Council in London. He's got this brand new one at Reuters. Why it's impossible to hide nuclear work in 24 days or 24 years. Welcome back to the show, Yosef. How are you doing?
Good. Good to be back.
Good. Very happy to have you here. So obviously, what's at issue in this article is the Iran nuclear deal, and one of the major objections, or perhaps kind of pretended objections to the deal, which is that under the terms of the deal, in the worst case scenario, Iran could drag out a snap inspection of a military site, not any nuclear site that's already safeguarded, but any other site that is a so-called suspicious site. They could drag out that inspection for up to 24 days and then sneak all their research out the back door. And by the way, I don't want to set up too easy of a straw man for you, so I'll go ahead and say, and what if it's not necessarily nuclear material they're messing with? What if they're just working on an implosion system and they're using lead or tungsten as a pretend fissile material there in testing the implosion system? They could sneak that out the back door in 24 days, but not leave any radiological type materials behind. So what about that too?
Yeah, well, you know, basically, people were objecting that there's this delay before inspections can take place. But like you said, the actual nuclear facilities that are declared will be in continuous safeguard. So they'll, at any time, there can be snap inspections. And if Iran tries to put that off, the sanctions could snap back on. So it's not like it's getting a free pass. Now, what this applies to, this 24-day maximum rule, is any place in Iran that's suspicious. So this is no country in the world allows you to come in and just walk up to any military site or anything and just like walk in.
Can you imagine UN inspectors trying to walk around Texas like that? Hey, let us into Fort Hood to look at whatever we want.
Exactly. So they basically worked out in this deal that, hey, there's going to be two so we can chat and figure out a way to get in. And then there's, a few more days after that, like 10 more days to work out a methodology to get in. And basically, once you're in, any nuclear material can be picked up very easily, even if they've tried to sneak it out, because this is microscopic dust that, there's instruments right now that the sensitivity allows you to pick up even trace fingerprint amounts of nuclear material. So, people who say that you can clean up a nuclear site are just wrong. So, you'd take swipes, you'd go in cracks in the room, in bolt holes, at the corners of the room, at where the walls meet the floor, et cetera, and you'd take an ultra-clean cotton cloth and pass it along those. And then those would be processed in labs and any microscopic, down to nanogram amount, the 1/1,000,000th of a gram could be picked up. So there's no hiding this. And it doesn't matter if it's, 10 days, 24 days, 24 years, you'll pick this up. So, the objection's a bit contrived.
Yeah, sure seems like it. Okay, now, and that really is an important point that's worth going back to about the full inspections at the declared nuclear facilities. They'd have to somehow divert nuclear material from, somewhere along the chain between the mine, the conversion facility, the enrichment plant, to have anything to make a bomb with anyway. And how are they supposed to get away with that when now those inspections are expanded permanently? And I think you know, the reason it's really worth going back over this most elementary point here is because they're kind of lying when they talk about this 24 days, Yosef, because the war party side, they never specify that they're not talking about the nuclear sites. They, you know, they don't necessarily lie about that directly and say, oh, no, they can close down Natanz for 24 days or anything like that. But they just sort of imply that the inspections, have all these obstructions to them without ever addressing the other part, like we talked about, that every bit of declared nuclear material from womb to tomb in the entire cycle in Iran will be safeguarded 24 hours a day, 100% of the time, under the additional protocol, much more than ever before. This is
Yeah, exactly. I mean, basically, Iran, the way things are right now, or what's been agreed to, would have the toughest inspections rules ever. You know, so why wouldn't you agree to that? I mean, it doesn't get tougher than that in any country. So, you know, that's the bottom line.
Right. Okay. Now, so what about though if they're testing, an implosion system, for example, for a bomb? But without nuclear material, because you could do that with lead, right?
There's a couple of points there. Number one, you do these kind of tests with high explosives for conventional military. So that is actually technically legit. I mean, if it doesn't involve nuclear materials, then, you can't really make a huge difference to it. I mean, they could be doing it to test regular chemical bombs. You know, not chemical weapons, but
conventional explosives. You mean
conventional explosives? So, you cannot just tell them to stop all their military activity. So, part of this can go on. Heavy elements. These swipe samples can pick up other things too. It's not just that, they'll pick up only fissile cells. So, if you're particularly concerned about lead, there'll be signatures for that. You can do mass spectroscopy. You can. There's various ways to pick up the elements of interest. But the point being that you can't object very loudly to them doing non-nuclear stuff. I mean, that's not something that as far as I know, that's been agreed to. I mean, it would be against the spirit of the agreement, but they probably wouldn't be breaking the letter of it, even if they did that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, and all of this is really, I don't know all of it, but much of this is actually about Parchin, the military facility, and the accusations that they had a bomb chamber where they were testing explosives there. Now, my friend Gordon Prather, who used to make H-bombs and stuff at Sandia National Laboratory, was the chief scientist of the Army. He's explained to me that that's not how you do it. You test them outside, not in an explosive chamber like this. And I think Robert Kelly, the former chief of the Iraq inspections regime for the IAEA back in the early 90s, he's written a pretty compelling piece for Loblog called The Parchin Puzzle, where he seems to cast doubt on this explosives chamber's even existence at all, I think, and especially, as Gareth Porter has also debunked, the cooperation of this supposed former Soviet nuclear physicist, bomb maker, but in fact he wasn't a nuclear physicist at all, this guy Dan Alenko. And anyway, I just wonder, if you could give us your summation of what you think about the Parchin accusations, whether the thing is just all wet or how that plays into this 24 days. What do the Iranians care? Why don't they just let him come back to Parchin three more times or whatever and just get this story debunked, because it's obviously, bogus in the first place.
There's a few points to make about Parchin.
Sorry.
And then why don't they let them back in? I think they're willing to do that as long as there's a plan to resolve it. I think what's not desired from their side is that they'll now go in, they find nothing here, and there's another building of interest after 2 weeks. And they don't want this wild goose chase to go on, because the IAEA already came twice in 2005 and looked at different parts of Parchin, I think five buildings each time, and they found nothing at all, nothing suspicious, nothing dual use, no nuclear material. So now they have a new building of interest, and I think, I don't know what the detailed negotiations are, but I think what's going on is they just want a work plan to resolve it. They don't want, hey, you'll come in here, you'll find nothing, and then there'll be another building of interest.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're saying
they'll agree to it, but they want to have in writing what's going to happen.
They want a flow chart of like how this will get resolved, not that you'll keep asking to come back in each time you find nothing, because this is a sensitive military site from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Parchin, the main point I'd like to make about that is that whatever is happening, the place that you want to take samples from, these samples that I talked about earlier, is from inside the building. So now all this propaganda that's been put out by the ISIS folks run by David Bright is wrong. They're talking continuously about stuff that's happening outside. What you want to do is go inside the building, take swipes. If there is a chamber, Iran has done a great favor to the IAEA because they can go into the chamber and they can take swipes and they can pick up any nuclear material that was there used ever, even if there's been sanitization, even if Iran's been trying to clean it, because you cannot dilute it down to the amount that you won't pick up these nanogram amounts of nuclear material. So if Iran did have a chamber in there, that's great for the IAEA because that concentrates the nuclear material, if there was any nuclear material.
Mm-hmm.
So all this talk about paving outside and bulldozers and cars and, suspicious activity is all wrong. I mean, what's happening of interest is inside the building. Now, if they demolish the building and they pave it over, yeah, that's suspicious. But as long as that building is standing, people can go in. Even if it's been tried to be cleaned up, you can still pick up nanogram amounts of material, and you can pick that up. So, just watch out for the propaganda, people.
Yeah, it's amazing that people still take Albright seriously when his whole case before was, you know, hey, look, a pink tarp.
Well, you know, there's a blog over at Arms Control Law that I just reviewed everything for Parchin on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go in, more and more technical people, and even Mark Gibbs and James Acton at the Carnegie Institution are casting doubt on ISIS properly, finally.
Right. In fact, yeah, I saw the guy from Carnegie fighting with him on Twitter.
Right.
Yeah, the parking lot of death. Everybody be afraid because there's a couple of sedans parked at the west end of this parking lot here.
Yeah, I mean, their basis just seems to be just to keep the word Parchin in the news. And
right.
They actually managed to do that by putting out stupid press releases.
Right. All right. Now, I accidentally took you into this break here. Hold on just a sec. I don't want the live audience to miss too much of this, Yosef, but we'll be right back in just a sec, okay?
Okay.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton talking with Yosef Butt. He's a nuclear physicist. And we're debunking some of the anti-Iran nuclear deal propaganda that's been floating around here. And, of course, David Albright from... not that ISIS, the other ISIS, constantly putting out leaks and being the basis for pretended news stories by the likes of George John and David Sanger, claiming alarmist things about the nature of Iran's nuclear program and what's going on there. And we were joking about, you know, oh, look, a garden hose and a pink tarp. You know, that's Corning insulation, dude. That's not a tarp. And even if it was a tarp, what the hell does that mean? You think they're washing away uranium with a hose? Or what is this? But it doesn't matter, as Yosef was saying. I'm sorry we went into the break there where you couldn't hear it. But he was saying, you know, it's just about keeping the name Parchin in the news. You know, just, oh, look, they're lying. Oh, look, they're cheating. Oh, here we are in the middle of trying to get this deal done. And here they are, according to the satellites, meaning according to what David Albright claims the satellites show, something to be worried about. And you know what? You got to hand it to him, Yosef. It worked, right? A week ago, the headlines were dominated by this story. That here the Iranians are sticking their middle finger at us right when Congress is debating whether to allow this thing to go through or not.
Yeah, it'd be a shame to hang this up because, you know, some NGO doesn't have the scientific skills to analyze imagery. I mean, this guy gets in front of Congress and talks about all kinds of imagery. Somebody in Congress should ask if there's any scientist at the Institute of Science and International Security or what imagery experts they have and what their training is, because I don't see it from their public side. I don't see any scientists at that institute.
Yeah, I mean, the Robert Kelly piece that, let's see, I have here somewhere. I did have it.
The bottom line on Parchin is if anybody's telling you about things outside that are happening, it's not that interesting. Because what the IAEA should be interested in doing is going inside the building, and if there's a chamber, going inside the chamber and taking samples there. And that's very simple. That's what needs to be done. That's the most important thing. So it doesn't matter if there's bulldozers at the site, if there's asphalting, whatever, that you don't need to pay attention to that right now.
Well, I mean, and maybe they would if there was a previous accusation that right there where they're pouring new asphalt is where we think they were doing outside tests, because, again, at least as Gordon Prather puts it, the accusations of what supposedly was going on at Marivan made more sense, because that's how you have to do these tests for the implosion systems is outside. But no one ever said they were doing tests outside at Parchin. They said there was this test chamber and tests going on inside. Now they're saying, oh God, look, a bulldozer and a parking lot and a Mercedes-Benz sitting there. So what else does that mean other than, you know, paint tarp, garden hose, and again, just keep the name Parchin out there, but no specific accusation. But meanwhile, the Iranians invited the IAEA to come out to Marivan to check out what was going on out there, and the IAEA refused to come out and look, apparently because they already figured they weren't going to find anything.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when El Baradei was the head of the IAEA, possible military dimensions PMD file, which includes Parchin and a bunch of other stuff, including Marivan, it was called the alleged studies because they were only allegations. And he said there was major questions about the authenticity of it, so he didn't take it very seriously. And if you look at what happened in 2005 with Parchin, where, you know, they had open access. Iran divided it up into four bits and said, you know, pick anyone you want, go in, inspect away. And they went in once, they didn't find anything. They went another time, they didn't find anything. And then, you know, the relationship between the IAEA and Iran got sour and sour, and then they haven't allowed the IAEA back in. And I think it's because there's no flow chart of how this is going to get resolved. So hopefully that's been worked out in these agreements between the IAEA at the large deal that's been negotiated, between the IAEA and Iran. And hopefully they can work it out, and people should just wait and let them get on with their scientific work instead of trying to talk about bulldozers and parking lots.
Well, now, so my understanding was that the IAEA had never really confronted the Iranians with the actual documents to say, how do you explain these? But now this Reuters story from Saturday says that the Iranians have just given them a whole new stack of documents, I guess, regarding past research. But I guess they're not necessarily, real refutations of the PMD, because they still haven't been shown the documents to refute, right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I don't know what's been.
They're basically doing like Saddam in '95 and just saying, "Here's everything," and we don't know what else to tell you.
And I don't think all of it is the IAEA's problem, because I think some of the countries haven't shared it with the IAEA even. So. I just don't know where the ball's been dropped on that. But, some of the PMD things may actually have happened but are not necessarily nefarious. For instance, some of these floating bridge wire detonators, those can be used in nuclear weapons, but they can be used in, oil exploration and explosive use right. for normal oil wells. So maybe that's part of the information that Iran gave over, whatever actually did happen, whatever part of the PMD file is true, you know, certainly they can respond to that. And the IAEA may have shared more information for them to respond to. I don't know.
Well, and they've had a track record for years now of successfully explaining away any number of accusations about what they're doing, from, and many of which, again, can be traced back to ISIS and David Albright. Look, everybody, at these magnets. Oh, my God, the magnets. But then, yeah, there they are at this, you know, centrifuge machine at this university that has nothing to do with nuclear or anything. I mean, there it is in use. And there's all kinds of things like that where the IAEA has eventually said that we're satisfied.
That seemed to be false. For instance, those graphs that the AP Associated Press leaked a couple of years ago, saying, "Oh, this is, you know, this is the curve for the explosion energy of a nuclear device." And if you look at it from a technical viewpoint, all the time scale doesn't make sense. It's like mathematical errors in it. Somebody's just done a botched job of you know, what it looks. Certainly, like somebody's trying to plant a fake thing, because it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, that's not something that research scientists working at a national level, the kind of mistakes that they would make. So certainly I can see where Al-Baradei was coming from when he said that there's major questions of the authenticity of some of the documents.
Yeah. Well, and of course, you know, anybody who's really trying to look honestly at all this information, I think, would agree that they never really did have a nuclear weapons program. They always wanted to settle for just a capability, as a half a nuclear deterrent, as good enough, whether for religious reasons, really, or just strategic reasons. Like, they know they could never build a nuclear arsenal in time to head off the U.S. and Israel and, you know, that kind of thing. And so they just decided, more than a decade ago, that they would just stick their hands up and open their books up and say, "See, we're not making nukes. Don't shoot." And they would just try to do a better job of pleading not guilty than Saddam ever did, you know, and in order to avoid regime change. And that's been their policy this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, basically the bottom line, like, it'd be a shame because the deal that's been negotiated is very tough on Iran. There's very intrusive inspections. You know, it's a good deal. It makes sense for everybody. Everyone's agreed to it. And then if these people, you know, shouting from the sidelines, these non-scientists at ISIS, manage to sabotage it because of their propaganda, that'd be a real shame.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, thanks for doing your part to help push back against it with real scientific credentials here at Reuters. It's why it's impossible to hide nuclear work in 24 days or 24 years by Yosef Butt at Reuters.com. Thanks very much. Come back on the show. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe.